Welcome to Business by Design, a podcast that explores the evolving nature of design leadership and how to scale design's impact in the world. Business by Design is brought to you by Tech Circus, leaders in curating inspirational content for inspired professionals, and me, your host, Martin Dowson. I care deeply about the impact that design can have in the world, and as a designer and management consultant, I'm acutely aware of the fact that this impact is more often than not mediated through business. In this podcast, we will address the need for more business acumen in design careers, especially at a leadership and executive level. We will talk with CDOs, design directors, design educators, academics, and consultants, exploring how each of them see the future of design leadership and its impact on the world.
Just start embedding some people in places within the organization to just start helping them to deliver. And don't worry about climbing up in the organization. Don't worry about getting recognition. Don't worry about, for the moment, how design is perceived, because you're not going to be able to fix that bubble straight away. It takes time.
In today's episode, I catch up with Brian Hoadley, Design Transformation Director with Sopra Steria and Interim Design Exec, who has built and developed a number of design teams over his career, most recently at Lloyds Banking Group, BT and Purple Bricks. Brian recently wrote a Medium article challenging design to stop waiting for a seat at the top table when there were so many other tables to be playing at. And this seems to me to encapsulate so much about the existential struggle design leadership seems to be in, that I thought Brian would be a great contributor to the Business by Design conversation. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to share my upfront cliff notes, hopefully to add context and deepen your takeaways from this conversation. First of all, Brian is one of those people who's well known inside the design community, but that you won't see on stage or hosting a podcast. And without taking away from that form of contribution to our community, we need to pay attention to the people who have been quietly, thoughtfully, and passionately getting on with transforming design. They have deep learned experience, and every time I get into conversation with Brian, it helps enrich what I've learned from my own experiences. Secondly, Brian and I both have in common the fact that neither of us are formally design educated. And I think this lends important weight and context to Brian's experience, especially as we are exploring design's need for more business acumen. And finally, towards the end of our conversation, you'll hear perhaps one of Brian's biggest takeaways about the varying need for the CDO role and how design teams can best demonstrate the value of and elevate their impact. And it's absolutely not about shiny creative concepts or visions. So, let's step into the conversation now. I hope you find it useful. So welcome, Brian Hoadley. Thank you, Brian, for joining me on the podcast, Business by Design.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, our listeners will have heard me hint at the introduction that we know each other, and we've worked together before at Lloyds Banking Group. And some of the stuff that we've talked about in the past, we kept saying, we should have recorded that. We should write that down. I'll admit, given these were mostly after-work conversations over a shared love of a martini, it was a total toss-up as to whether I'd be inviting you into a cocktail podcast or a design podcast. I guess ideally both, but the background noise on the cocktail one would probably not be great for audio. So here we are. We're going to chat about design instead, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your views on design leadership with impact. Now, before we get into chatting about that, would you mind giving everybody just a little flavour of your background and how you came into design? Because I think that's a really interesting context for your experience.
Yeah, sure. Well, I took I'm not sure if it's a non-traditional approach, I suppose. I started off actually working in engineering quite a long time ago. Got into working in digital back in the mid-90s. And worked my way into design. So I didn't come in from a design school background. I started working with digital and product design in the early days when there frankly wasn't very much to work with, and learned everything from the ground up. So I'm predominantly self-taught in that respect. Read a lot, attend a lot of interesting talks and sessions. But you know, worked basically grafting away at it for a very long time. I got a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing along the way. So I actually, interestingly, found that some of the things that I did around storytelling and narratives in that became very applicable to the work I was doing in design, and leveraged that and some of the other experience I had to kind of create a niche, basically, where I sat somewhere between design, the business, engineering, product, and over time really went from working in design to founding design agencies to leading design and consulting for organizations on how to build design functions and design teams, product teams, research teams, and how they sit within the organization. So that's kind of the journey that I've been on.
Yeah, I think this is where you and I have found some common ground, although I'm definitely going to point out that when you say the early days, you really mean the early days.
Very early.
You've got a few years on me. Not that many. You've only got a few years on me. But I think it is interesting that when you were getting started, it really was kind of total white snow. It was unexplored territory. Everything was new. And I came into things in around about 2000, and still design was very, in a digital sense, was very, very nascent. And we both have come into this field without, you know, the air quote design craft education. We've talked about this before. I think that provides a certain unique perspective, doesn't it? I mean, people talk a lot about the multidisciplinary designer, and a while back that used to mean a combination of design crafts. It means a bit more now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you're at the start of something like digital, and everybody's trying to figure out everything, you begin taking on bits and pieces of lots of different roles. It's only over time that people have really specialized in specific things in design. And we've even, I think it's even cyclical in the sense that it's been around long enough that we've seen people focus on becoming really good information architects. But nobody talks about information architecture anymore. So I think some things have kind of come and gone, or they've been fragmented or absorbed into kind of the ethos of design. And I think also lots of roles have kind of merged and then come apart again in different, you know, configurations. But I think it was a time when you had to know a lot about the business. You had to know a lot about your stakeholders, your customers. The technology, because you were probably involved in lots of different aspects of implementing that. And I think today that's the kind of thing that people who are quite senior, people who've been around for quite a long time, are recognizing that they need to be more of that, I think, in the organization.
I remember having some conversations with people when I was doing my own, trying to understand what it meant to have a design education and what that gave you. There was this idea from industrial and product design that you would need to understand the materials of production, as it were. And I remember one of the first customer experience directors that I worked for was a trained architect. Sorry, apologies, they were a UX director. And they were a trained architect and then come into UX. And this idea that actually they were designing the space, the architecture degree, the product design degree, the industrial design degree taught you to understand the things that you had to work with as your constraints. And I think you've just described for us what the materials of production are in business today, which is an element of technology, an element of the digital assets that you have that you can work with, but then also the organization, the people, the process. There's a lot more to it now, isn't there?
Yeah, it's everything around you. I mean, you're depending on what you're trying to deliver, it's not like it was 25 years ago where you were developing and delivering, say, a website, a plain vanilla website, a brochureware site, an e-commerce site. Everything today is so integrated. So financial services, financial teams within the organization are integrated, legal, compliance, regulatory, technology, IT infrastructure, sales and marketing systems, CRM systems. You suddenly find that underneath the way companies are operating, all of these systems are interconnected. So it's a very systemic approach, and you have to really begin to understand much more about the company than just, for instance, the user you're designing for, because you have to understand the holistic experience for everybody across the organization, as well as people external.
Do you think that, and I'm going to, you know, smoothly segue to the article that you wrote recently, which is one of the reasons we wanted to get together to chat. Do you think that that holistic view is what is leading to a lot of design wanting to be at the top table so that they can see everything, so that they feel like design needs to influence everything, so it needs to be higher up in the organization? Is that, do you think that's what's driving this conversation about the top table?
Actually, I mean, that may drive the conversation for some people. And it may be that there are certain people who genuinely want to have a holistic view of the organization. I actually think there, some of the other things that are driving it are design in a lot of organizations being subordinated into, for instance, agile production processes. Mm-hmm. And designers feeling like they're starting to become much more a part of the kind of granular fabric of the delivery process. Mm-hmm. Which makes them feel like they're further away from the decisions that are being made in the organization and the things that impact and affect them. And I'm not saying this is in all cases. There are equally a lot of organizations where design sits at the forefront, and it's part of the business strategy, part of the product strategy and vision for the organization. But I think there are still today too many companies where design has been subordinated into a very kind of tactical deliverable, and design as an ethos and a philosophy suddenly has become just a tactical output. What are you delivering? What will you deliver in the next 2 weeks? And so I think a lot of designers kind of yearn for more recognition. Mm-hmm. They yearn to feel a part of the decision-making process that they're impacted and affected by. Mm-hmm. But I think there are a lot of ways to kind of get at being an influencer, for instance, in an organization other than just sitting at that top table, for instance.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of some of the things that I saw in this article that you wrote. While design waits for a seat at the top table, is it missing out on other places to sit? I thought this was really... what was really good about this was a kind of, are we even talking about the right thing to be so focused on the top table? Your article is kind of, there are loads of other places where you could be adding value and, I guess, influencing decisions and having impact, because there are all these other tables to be part of. I really liked the way that was articulated. I was slightly nervous about your opening metaphor about the wedding, that the planning of seating is up to the hosts, you said. And I was like, so basically you deserve the seat you got at the wedding. I was like, ouch.
Yeah. I mean, not a comfortable thing if you're about to attend a wedding and you start to wonder, why am I sitting where I'm sitting?
Table 48 for you.
Behind the column and the plant.
Yeah. We've got the chef's table for you. Yes, that's right. You're in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was really just trying to get across that sometimes the decision isn't up to designers in the discipline. Yeah. And sometimes, I guess the real point I'm trying to make is you have to work hard to get a seat at the top table, right? And it's not just design. It's if you work in engineering or marketing or sales, mm-hmm. or any of the other divisions in the company. Mm-hmm. People get there by working hard and showing success and delivering, and they work their way up. But I also think there are a lot of other disciplines that have an advantage over design, and that's that in their very nature they're already business oriented, many of them. And right. Business is very much an endemic part of their education, and it's mm-hmm. very much a part of their background and their experience. But I also think budget holders tend to get more experience in managing budgets, managing teams as a result of having budgets to manage, mm-hmm. beginning to learn about P&L responsibility, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Whereas I think a lot of design teams that I've worked with over the years, they're not always allocated a budget per se. They're given 5 people, 10 people, 20, 30, 40 people to recruit. So they go and recruit them. But they're not told you have a £10 million budget and you're responsible for managing that budget, and that's tied to key metrics and drivers in the business. So I think quite often designers don't don't get as exposed to the kinds of things that other people who do sit in the C-suite get exposed to, and therefore they have to work harder to make their way up there, and that will mean making sacrifices along the way in terms of discipline.
And by sacrifices, you mean they'll need to do other types of work or get involved in other types of things in order to build up a wider range of their skills?
I think so. They need to. There's a real need to become broader at what they do, and that the time that you spend becoming broader, the time that you spend delivering and working on spreadsheets, which you and I've done endlessly, the time that you work writing business cases, the time that you're doing strategic planning across disciplines with other disciplines, all of these things are taking you away from doing design, the act of doing design, being on the ground with your design team. So a lot of designers I've worked with over time, they have a hard choice to make about do I go up the management path? And if I go up the management path, how much of a practitioner can I still be in doing that? As opposed to do I just become a very great senior level practitioner and just be that, right? And I think that decision point is a point where you begin to recognize that there will be some sacrifices that you need to make. And if you want to go beyond that point and you want to go further up the chain within the organization, there will be more sacrifices that you'll need to make in terms of design. Now, you're just taking a different role, really. You're moving away from doing design to becoming an advocate of design within the organization. And you're picking up the business skills that will position you in a way in the C-suite or in a move to the C-suite that enable you to actually become the evangelist for design at that top table if you get there.
I think you've nailed something there, which is that, I mean, I've been talking to people about this podcast series and the Business by Design conference about the executive role as being, what does it mean to think about yourself as a business executive who leads a design capability? And so you put it that way round, and then your peers are other business executives. I'm still a little bit uncomfortable with the fact that the assumption that there's design and then everything else is da business. That's still, to me, a little bit siloed in thinking, because I still hold on to this idea that there's a lot of design that we need embedded in the rest of the business.
Yeah.
And by return, designers need to embed a lot more business in them. It's a two-way street.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's one of the main points I was trying to get to in the article that I wrote, was while people are focused on on that seat at the top table, are they potentially missing out on other places within the organization they could be practicing design? So if you begin to disintermediate the idea of being a designer who delivers product design within an organization from the tools, skills, method, models that you use to do that, you realize that you can really begin to apply those tools, method, skills, experience, and models to other parts of the business. So you can help the finance team, for instance, if there are things they want to do around putting together a bit of planning, and they want to actually shape how they're going to engage in the business. You could run workshops with them. You can work with IT in terms of helping them to understand their customers in the business better. So you can begin to apply a lot of the skills that you have to the problems that other teams have in the business and help them solve their problems. And I think that's another route to getting recognition in the business. It's because you're if you approach it in a relatively selfless way, you're just providing those skills to the organization, and you're making them available to people. You're actually helping people solve problems, and when you help them solve problems, and create solutions that work for them in the organization, you start to build advocacy. And when you build advocacy, it's a win-win for design. In the process of doing that, design begins to learn more about other parts of the business. They learn about finance, they learn about IT and technology, they learn about legal and compliance, they learn about sales and marketing. So these are places where they, if they venture out a bit horizontally within the business, they actually stand to gain a lot, I think, and they stand to learn a lot in the process.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether it's if you think about the beginning of a career, the middle of a career, well, actually, I mean, my dad always used to say to me, you have about four or five careers. You have four or five different careers. It's not just phases of one career. Some of the designers that I've seen who are having most impact as leaders, you can absolutely see they started in one of the crafts and disciplines. They may have then moved to be labelled or take on a role with a title from another discipline. And then normally some of the most unique designers I've seen have then gone and applied it somewhere you wouldn't have expected it, where you're kind of going, well, where's the output? Where's the interface? Where's the tangible thing that a human being looks at with that? And they've done something like that. And I'm now seeing people popping up with all sorts of job titles that you wouldn't necessarily think were in a hierarchical design career ladder, right? So, you know, back when we both started, the ultimate would have been to be the creative director. And if not that, if you're a bit more business savvy, you'd own an agency, right? So, I think the ultimate path for design now is not to be the most senior creative person executing or directing on creative. That's not the route anymore. I think it's how do you use design to have more impact in business?
Yeah, I mean, I think again, if at the core it's about solving problems, right? Understanding needs, solving problems, delivering value to the business. You can deliver value externally and internally. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of people who are fully capable of being really great, strong practitioners.
Yeah.
But I think, and I think they need to be leveraged in the right way, and sometimes mm-hmm. better ways than they maybe are. Mm. But I think in terms of people who start to look at, are there other ways to help the business? Are there other ways to grow what we do, to build advocacy, I use the word evangelize, but you know, it almost sounds like broadcasting. So it's, I don't mean it in a broadcasty kind of way. I mean it more in a show by doing. So, right. So don't talk about design, do design. Show people how design works, how it functions. And, mm-hmm. and this is, I think, one of the things I run across quite a lot is I work with a lot of companies who we have to build new functions or restructure existing ones. And often there are issues around an understanding of what design does in the business, what value mm-hmm. does it provide. And so often when you have a good look at it, what you find is that design teams, they tend to kind of almost, if they feel that they're within an organization that doesn't quite get them, they almost circle the wagons a little bit too much. And they talk to each other and they do their design work amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. They conduct research and they provide the insight back into their own design activities. But they don't open up the process so that people can see how they work. They're not transparent enough about mm-hmm. design method, about the process of design. And so therefore they part of the reason I think that design in some places has been subordinated into a delivery function is it's not done a very good enough job about exposing what design is to the organization. Right. So people don't understand it.
And so this kind of leads me to another thought, which is we still need the production though, right? So we talked earlier on about, I think we're kind of referring to designers in general, but we mean there are always individuals and a lot of individuals who want to have, be closer to the decision making, to feel and see that their work is having more impact, or understand that context. And yet there is also the work that just needs to be done. Somebody shared with me this kind of graphic once, the story of a person who says, can you design me a business card? And the designer says, sure, yeah, great. But really, the problem's not the business card, it's the logo. I said, okay, well, can you design me a logo? He said, yeah, sure, I can design you a logo. I said, well, the problem is not really just the logo, it's really the company name and what are you doing? I said, okay, fine. Well, and so it goes on until you kind of get to world peace. But at the end of the day, the business card still needs to be designed. You know, it still needs to be made. Yeah. So we've got a job to do, I think, as well, to separate, not to separate, but to understand that there is production. There's the shaping of the intent and there is the rendering of the intent. And the rendering still needs to be done. And actually, there's deep craft to be learnt in that rendering. There's deep practice and methods and tool sets to be done. I do find sometimes that when we start to talk to people about then opening up and making that transparent, they've got a double whammy hit, which is, I don't feel like we're getting enough senior strategic coverage, and you want me to expose the one thing that we are being asked to do to everybody else. I think it's the mindset and the approach that we're trying to expose, not the deep craft of the actual execution of design. That is 100% the designer, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with that. I think it's the thinking that you really want to expose. It's the way designers approach problem solving. It's the tools and methods they use to untangle complex issues. Mm-hmm. And it's also, people talk about soft skills, but you know, soft skills is always a hugely misunderstood thing. I think the ability to collaborate can show up as a soft skill on certain things, but collaboration is actually a very tangible thing that designers do, mm-hmm. and that they're very good at getting people together to discuss mm-hmm. problems and to discuss requirements and to discuss things around why they challenge. They want to know, why does the business think this is a priority? Mm-hmm. Why is this a priority for customers? Why would customers need this? And so it's when they engage, I have clients that I've worked with where the second you start bringing good experienced designers into the mix and they start challenging, people just sit back and they say, whoa, we're just not used to being challenged, really. We're not used to being asked those questions. We do these things because this is how we've done them. It's how we work. Yeah. And I think there's a lot that design is, it's basically design getting its elbows out a little bit, right? Okay. But at the same time, finding a way to invite people in and kind of orchestrate better outcomes. And yes, there is tangible deliverables mm-hmm. that have to come out of it at the end of the day. But I think design needs to be in a space where it can extend itself in a broader way in the organization to apply mm-hmm. its skills in a broader way in the organization. But I also think in doing that, the hope is that you do gain some of the recognition that some designers and design leaders are looking for in terms of being able to move up in the organization. But at least then you're doing it by example and you're doing it through experience and delivery and those things and also maybe measurable value.
So do you, that kind of train of thought made me think back to the top table thing about you want design to be able to have that kind of impact, to be able to flex across the organization where it can have that kind of impact. And I guess some people's answer to that is the higher up we're represented, the more we're going to be able to do that. And your article was kind of saying, well, actually, you could just go and do that in lots of different places. So my question to you, although I think I'm pretty sure we have talked about this before, do you think every organization needs a chief design officer?
No.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. The chief design officer, it seems to be the new creative director thing to aim towards.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think there will be, and I know there are examples where there have been chief design officers who've moved up to the top table, and all it's done because they weren't the right shape for the business is expose that maybe design isn't ready for a seat at the top table in that organization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a double-edged sword, right? I think, you know, organizations where design is a primary driver of products and services, and it's very mm-hmm. integrated into the ethos of the company, and the company is quite mature in how it is integrated, right? Functionally integrated. Mm-hmm. I think I could see design moving up into a more senior role in that space, and potentially getting up into a chief design officer role. Certainly companies, you know, like Philips is a great example of a company, product-based. You'll have somebody who is, if not called a chief design officer, somebody acting in that role, right? So you have...
Philips have got Sean Carney, right? And Sean is... Sean actually has P&L responsibility for design as a service, internally and externally.
And that is the view of what a chief design officer, a business-oriented chief design officer, would look like at a top table, right? But there are a lot of organizations where if design doesn't have P&L responsibility, if design is a part of the overall product and service suite of the business, but not its entirety, you're not selling a designed product, but design is something that you need in the organization, but it's not actually the prime driver of how the organization does business, then do you need a chief design officer? Probably not. You'd have a hard time making a case for it. It really comes down to, I think, for me, it's maturity of the organization and what kinds of products and services does the organization sell? What does it provide to the market? And how does design touch all the different aspects and points of the organization? Does it touch everything in such a way that if it didn't sit at the top table, those things would be less successful? It doesn't need to be at the top of every organization. And I think there's too much talk about that needing to be a role in every company. And I just think it's not necessarily the right thing to focus on.
Well, I mean, if you think across the ExCo, the executive committees, and then the boards of the vast variety of companies that there are out there, they've all got a slightly different makeup. I know there are some consistent roles there. There's practically always a COO, and of course there's a CEO.
Yep.
But whether somebody's got a chief customer officer or a chief marketing officer, whether it's a chief information officer or a chief technology officer or a chief digital officer, it varies. And it varies depending on the theory of business that the business has and the operating model it's doing and using to try and be successful in. I guess I'm certainly seeing people in senior roles who are executives of design, but the title and the exact place they are in the organization varies greatly. But what matters more is whether they're turning up as an executive within the business than what their role or position is.
Yeah.
Their role title, as it were.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I think part of it comes down to, from a design perspective, what is the pathing, the career pathing of a designer, right?
Mm.
And if you work in marketing or you work in engineering, you might think, well, my career path could take me up to being a chief marketing officer. It could take me up to being a chief technology officer, right? I could become a CIO or a CFO if I worked in those areas. And if you're a designer and you have that kind of ambition and you want to move in a similar way, I guess the question becomes, what kind of career pathing do you have? How has design been, you know, handled in other organizations? And are you actually targeting the kind of organizations to work in that potentially have that kind of career pathing or could have?
Yeah.
And I think, not like you said, not every organization is going to have a space or a role for a chief design officer. So you can't force something on people that they either don't want or don't need.
People that know me know that I talk a lot about IBM and I talk a lot about Philips, because I recognize in both of those companies in different ways a maturity of the organization in using and leveraging design, and then the maturity in the design team in understanding that they're there to help with business outcomes that are human-centered. But it's both. I noticed a lot that at IBM, their strategy was to do design work and add design skills in a way that was relevant to the business, but also make the different business units, basically let them be responsible for it. So they have the headcount and the budget, so that it's not centralized in any way. And that meant that business units decide to use more or less design and see whether or not they are more or less successful. And as they've been more and more successful, there have been more and more senior roles. We've got one chap that's at the Business by Design conference who is a chief design officer at IBM, but he's not the chief design officer. He's the chief design officer for IBM products.
Mm-hmm.
It's words in a title, but the point is he is the most senior executive for design for IBM products. It's a business role, and it's become through really clearly. And I think that's something that design leadership paths are not used to, and I'm quite intrigued because some of the maturity in that has come from some fairly traditional design backgrounds. So in CPG, not even in just packaged goods, just in physical products, in automobile, in all of these industries that have a long history of design, they've also got really mature, business mature design leaders. So has something happened over the last 20 years, I reckon, where things sped up so much and the technology would allow us to turf out a lot of very digital first businesses and experiences. And it became quicker and quicker and quicker to design the one experience channel that there was, which was digital. I'm wondering whether some of the design career path has lost a sense of maturing in it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely been some fragmentation in design within, particularly within digital product and service development. I think people forget sometimes about the lineage of design. I still, you can read lots of books on UX mm-hmm. and service design. I mean, as I look across at my bookshelf, I've got Dieter Rams. I've got mm-hmm. a book on why materials matter. I think that's because I'm looking for things in design that are rooted in traditional design method, mm-hmm. because that's our history in this space, and I think it's kind of been watered down and fragmented down. Potentially agile delivery hasn't helped to an extent because it's fragmented. Some companies interpret it, you know, very differently. A lot of companies interpret it very differently into just, it's almost a granularization of design into a scrum process. And so design becomes part of the pointy end, delivery end of the stick, and the other bits of design are forgotten. The lineage back is forgotten. The kind of holistic view of design, the philosophical view of design is forgotten. And so I don't know. I think there's been a lot of we haven't really done ourselves any favors in the sense of how many titles and how many roles have we created within digital product design over the years, over the last 25 mm-hmm. or 28 years, where we call it one thing and then 2 years later we call it something else. And mm-hmm. you get a lot of people in business who are having a difficult time relating to what X role does because in their last company it was called something else. And yeah. And so they kind of struggle with the idea of developing a mental model of what design is, because so many people are competing in design to be the first person to name something. They want to be the first person to call something out, to name something, to call it something. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. there's too much focus on that kind of thing within design, and not enough focus on design as a practice and unifying the practice of design within mm-hmm. within digital. So I've seen that happen. I've run into a lot of younger designers who there's so much stuff they're not even aware of. They'll mm-hmm. say, oh yeah, that came about for the first time about 5 years ago, about 8 years ago. And then you say, well, I was doing that 20 years ago, but that's okay. There's design within digital doesn't really have a very well documented history.
I remember
because
first
people,
go ahead. I remember first introducing a service blueprint to one of the partners at Accenture in 2003, and he looked at it and he said, yeah, Martin, I've done that already. I said, no, this is a service blueprint. This is all part of service design and end-to-end customer experience. He said, no, it's a process map with an operating model underneath it. and obviously the customer channel touch points. I was doing that 10 years ago, Martin. And this was somebody who I didn't necessarily perceive as being particularly customer experience. And that was me 3 years into my career. And I never forget that. It's like, yeah, actually, if you stick around long enough, you've seen a lot before. And you and I were together when we were looking at hiring from straight out of design school into banking. So that's the corollary to new designers, is that actually they're coming in with total freshness. And if you can catch people at that point in time and they're fresh from design school, where they've been learning about the materials of production as first principles, and then you say, right, okay, here is a large, complicated financial institution. And by the way, I'm actually not asking you necessarily to design an interface or a product. They just rock it, absolutely rock it. Because all they've got are the foundations and not any of the baggage of some sense of what they should be doing. And I've seen executives who are outside of design have their minds totally turned about design by fresh new designers, fresh new talent, or emerging talent, as I think we called it at the time.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely... Well, they're not tainted by the kind of dilution of design.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They probably come in with a better history of design holistically, mm-hmm. Which probably is a bit of a shock for them coming into digital design teams. Yes. To be fair.
Yeah. 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 True.
So it's it's maybe a different. That's another topic to tackle, I think, is juniors and new people entering the field. What's it mean today, as opposed to maybe what did it mean 10 years ago or 20 years ago?
Yeah. Do you think, I think it's probably a whole other topic as well, which is like how much business education needs to be in design education? Or do you think actually it's more about, as a designer, being aware that you're in businesses, so you should learn about the business and you should build those skills up along the way?
Well, it's interesting because when I got my engineering degree back in the 80s, business, minoring in business was a part of that. It was hand in hand with the engineering degree. Mm. So mm-hmm. even though I took a lot of very highly technical classes and a lot of science and maths and physics and everything else, I also had a lot of coursework in finance and accounting and marketing and things that went alongside of that. So I think in that sense, my education was maybe more rounded from the beginning, and I was exposed to many more things, you know, during my degree. So should business be more a part of a design education? Well, I think understanding the value of design to a business should be a part of it. I mean, every place I go, you're always questioned, how do you measure design? How do you measure the value of design? How do you know that design is adding value in terms of, whether it's strategic and you're, you know, looking at a discovery and trying to help product shape a vision for the organization? How do you determine design's contribution in that space? If it's in the delivery process and you've got designers embedded in Scrum teams, how do you measure the value that designers are providing to the process of delivering products and services? Mm-hmm. So I think designers that came out of school with more knowledge of that and also knew they were going to be asked that along the way. So they need to be thinking about it from the beginning, not hit with it at some point down the road. Means that you're hopefully creating more rounded individuals that come into the team.
Yeah, and then I guess if you're sitting in a company where you've actually already got a design capability in one form or another, and you're needing to, or you're given the opportunity to reshape that in some way or do something different with it, I guess that's a moment where you need to understand, well, how is design currently valued? It's probably a little bit more around the production. What do you do to make sure that is maintained, that is kept? You don't screw that up by then trying to go off and look at other things. But how can you then, I think you said it, which was like disintermediate from the production and the output, the outcome of design and the methods, tool sets and thinking. So then you've got to work out where that would be of most use to where in the organization. And I think that's the moment where if you've got an existing capability that you're trying to reshape into something more valuable, you've really got to start to try and understand what the business is doing and what the business is trying to achieve, so that you can work out where you can have the most impact and influence. Because I'm not sure that many organizations are going to get the chance, or many design leaders are going to get the chance that Phil Gilbert got, for example, where it was, yeah, let's do it. And here's a lot of investment, probably not by IBM scale, but quite a serious bit of investment, that he could do a test and learn, a prove out. So that becomes quite a challenge. So what do you think? What would your kind of counsel be, I guess, for design leaders now? You're at the level of that you're head of, and that could mean that you're leading a team of 20, or it could mean you're leading a team of 40 or 50 or more. You think you've got this opportunity to maybe do more with design. People seem to be open to it. But we've seen, you and I, time and time again, where that door's been opened, but if you haven't taken the right steps, it kind of boots you on the other way out, right? So what would your advice be to somebody in that position, where you've got the moment where you could actually start to reimagine what design can do? What are the kind of first steps? And I ask you this, Brian, because I know that you've in the last 3 or 4 years you've been in some companies where you've help to grow out design capability and even start design capability, and then hire teams to replace you. So I'm quite interested in your perspective on that.
Yeah, I mean, so for one thing, I think the thing I've learned is no two companies are the same.
That's so important, right? There is no single magic formula.
Yeah, there's no silver bullet to solving the problems, because the companies... It's like chemistry. You have different compounds and different chemicals coming together and interacting in the organization, and they interact in different ways in different companies. And maturity is maturity of the organization is a big factor. Maturity of digital within an organization, maturity of design and how design is perceived within the organization. There are so many different things, I think, that influence the kinds of success that you get. But I think the thing I works most often, the thing I find doesn't work very well.
Go on, yeah, let's start with that.
The thing I find doesn't work very well is to go and try and beat everybody over the head with design as a capability. Design's important. You need to understand the importance of design. I don't understand why you don't get it, right?
Yeah.
And yet, it seems like a really simple concept to kind of get your head around. But the amount of places that I've gone where people are using design as a tool to bludgeon other teams to say they're not working in the right way, which then creates obviously quite a negative atmosphere that you then have to unpick. So I end up having to come in sometimes to unpick those things and make them work better. And so one of the things I find that works in those kinds of circumstances is just start embedding some people in places within the organization to just start helping them to deliver. And don't worry about don't worry about climbing up in the organization. Don't worry about getting recognition. Don't worry about for the moment how design is perceived, because you're not going to be able to fix that bubble straight away. It takes time, and so demonstrating by doing is for me one of the top things that you can do. You can cut through the noise straight away if you can get people into a process, into a delivery process, and you get them starting to work alongside of developers, product managers, product owners, working with stakeholders in the organization. You get them into the conversations. You get them to start working, doing alongside of these people, delivering. after a bit of time, you can start getting people together to say, how's that going? And you can say things like, we design could work in a better way. we could actually provide more value to you if maybe we were engaged a little bit earlier in the process. So instead of saying, yeah. Coming in with a model and saying, design needs to be here, 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 and here, right? And it's not today, we're only here. And you need to fix that. Isn't yeah. going to fix it. But getting a foot in and starting to expand that both upwards towards product and downwards towards development and engineering and getting people together. One of the biggest things you can do is use some of your tools and tricks and get people collaborating. Run a mm-hmm. workshop with cross-functional teams. And get people to share and see kind of the value. So it's not a design exercise. It's just you're just facilitating people getting together to work better, but do that. And I think those are ways that you can start to make inroads with teams. But that's showing by doing. You can't be purist when you're trying to do these things. You have to be extraordinarily pragmatic. You got to be a problem solver. You need to be everybody's go-to problem solver. You're the guy that they know gets stuck in and helps them solve their problem. And that's how you start to unpick and create opportunities for design within the organization.
Well, I have to say, I think having worked with you, Brian, and seen what you did in building up customer labs at Lloyds Banking Group, and how you did that from scratch, I know that you're speaking from experience when you say that. So I think that's really sage advice, and actually also a really great way to bring our conversation to close with that absolute nugget. So thank you. Thank you very much. Now, just before we finally do say goodbye, I have got a few questions that I'm going to ask of all of my guests. And these are not prepared by you. You haven't seen them beforehand, so this is definitely off the cuff.
Oh, God.
Okay, so first question. If there was one thing in the world that you could redesign, what would it be?
What would I redesign? nothing so weighty, really. I find the day-to-day things that you use that frustrate you to be the things that you focus on the most. And this is going to sound really, really silly, but every week,
yeah,
every week I go to the shopping, the grocery store to shop. And every week I need to get a ticket from the machine. And every mm-hmm. week I struggle to use the damn machine. I can't read the screen. I can't figure mm-hmm. out the buttons. mm-hmm. I can't figure out when and where to use my card. And it's just little simple things like that, daily interactions. I'd love to get my hands on some of those kinds of things and redesign them just to make people's daily lives easier.
Love it. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not working, when paid work, that is? Because I think that there are many things in Brian's life. So I say, when you're not doing paid work, what's your favorite thing to do?
I don't know. Do you consider writing paid work? Not highly paid.
Well, I bought your book, so you're definitely getting paid.
not highly paid. I like. well, I mean, as I've begun writing novels.
Yeah.
So I think, that's something that I love to do, and there's something about it that structuring novels and storytelling and creating narratives that resonates with, I suppose, the other work mm-hmm. that I do. It's different and similar at the same time. Cool. So I think that's something I would say I love to do outside of my main activity.
One of the things I often ask people is, what are they reading at the moment? I'm not going to ask you that, because you're as an author. I'm going to ask you, what are you listening to or watching at the moment?
Let's see, what am I listening to or watching? Gosh, who has time? No, I've been funnily enough, I've been reading a lot of business books recently.
Yeah.
again, I think it probably goes back to a lot of the themes and things we've discussed. I'm reading a lot of business theory books, and I'm reading a lot of things around business strategy and vision, how you connect that to a proper product strategy and vision, but not necessarily in the digital sense. And I'm also mm-hmm. reading books on on materials because I don't know, I'm even though I don't work with them in the digital space, I'm fascinated with different materials, and also I suppose 3D printing and stuff coming out and being so big now, I kind of find I'm more fascinated in how design could how the design work I do could be impacted by things like that. So cool.
Well, that's really kind of spot on for what we've been saying, really, isn't it? So great. The last question that I have for you is, where can our listeners connect with you online and follow you?
Right. Gosh, all over the place. LinkedIn. I'm just in there as Brian Hoadley. I seem to be, I think, the only one that comes up. Same thing with, I'm on there as Brian Hoadley as well. Instagram and Medium. So you can find me on Medium under my name as well.
So, Brian, I just want to say thank you very much for spending this time with me. We finally managed to capture a conversation between us. I think next time we definitely need to do one that is design and cocktails, and we'll see where that one goes to. Start making our favourite cocktails. We'll do that one as a video.
It might not be very coherent by the end, but that's good.
No, I think that would be the aim. It's been really great to hear from you a bit more of your thinking behind this whole observations on the top table and the other tables that design can be part of. It's really interesting to see the evolution of design and the executive and leadership roles in design and how those are needing to really broaden out the skills. And we started at the beginning talking about just touching on the idea of a multidisciplinary designer, which was a lot of people talk about the unicorn designer, but what you and I've been talking about is actually a business confident designer and a business confident design leader as the real way in which design will maintain any kind of relevance and impact within business. So I think it's a really important conversation. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business by Design. Don't forget to check out the show notes for links and resources from our guests and a link to the fabulous Tech Circus who produced this podcast. Tech Circus are leaders in curating inspirational content for inspired professionals, and this podcast is just one of many events that they produce for the podcast, tech, and design community. I'm your host, Martin Dowson, and if you'd like to hear more content like this, then please do follow the podcast, and also take a moment to subscribe to our newsletter, where you can find out more about upcoming shows and, really importantly, how to connect back with me and the team so that we can hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. I'd really like to hear more from you, our listeners, about who you'd like to hear from next. If you subscribe to the show newsletter, you'll also get to hear about the Business by Design conference that we'll be running in November, where we deep dive into this over 3 days of awesome speaker-led content and a day of practical workshops with industry leaders in building business-confident design teams. Until next time, thank you for listening to Business by Design.